Time to feel the rush of the round table. Brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Are you really an independent contractor? Find out in seconds for free at PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Here we go for Wednesday, the 17th of June. This would be your roundtable. Joining us, Queen's Park Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star, Robert Benzie. Hello, Robert.
Hi, Jay.
And News Talk 1010 political analyst, Scott Reed. Yo, Scott.
Yo, Jay.
You guys are great. You guys are on
Yo, Jay Simpson. It's Yo, Jay Simpson.
Oh, it's good.
Yo, Jay. I love Yo, Jay. I'm a birder. I go to the woods all the time, little glasses. I look for Yo, Jays.
It starts already.
Why do I bother? All right, let's start off with something we were just talking to the mayor about. Of course, we've had massive protests here in the city of Toronto. The city's police board is going to hear recommendations on improving relations with communities of color, including establishing mental health teams to respond to calls and more training for officers. Now, what isn't on the table on Friday is what several councillors have been calling for, and that is a 10% reduction in the city's police budget, and they want that 10% reallocated to social services. The mayor has not, committed to that idea, but there are several others, Scott, in this report that are certainly steps forward as opposed to sitting on your hands and twiddling your thumbs.
Yeah, I think that the options that are proposed merit a lot of exploration. Like, some of them are pretty intriguing, and it'll carry us into a conflict with the union. And we talk about, okay, well, if there's going to be redeployment of resources in terms of what frontline officers are and are not asked to, so we'll sort all that out. But I'm glad there's not a 10% cut. Like, I think that argument should be had now, and I think it should be had squarely, and I think that we should not adopt the perspective that in order to make the police service work better, we have to reduce its budget. We should make its budget as effective as possible. And neither should we be suggesting that the problem is that the police are paid too much. I think the problem, obviously, is that we don't invest in the other resources enough. And then eventually, we'll have to have an argument about, okay, well, the people care this desperately about these things. Are you prepared to see your property taxes increase? Because you know what? It actually doesn't fall from the sky. And some of the councillors that are suggesting the 10% redeployment want you to think that you'll get the same level of policing for 10% less and not have to have your property taxes increased. And that, my friends, is a falsehood.
Robert, interesting all around. I think that when you look at it, at least we're trying something. I think it's first steps and baby steps, maybe. It'll be interesting to see what the board itself says yes to and what they say no to.
Yeah, I agree, Ryan. And I think Scott's right. I mean, the assumption that somehow cutting 10% of this $1.1 billion budget is going to mean all that money goes to some more worthy cause, I think it's fanciful. It doesn't work like that. It never works like that. And budget cuts, we have seen, tend to result in worse service. So, there are people, I'm sure, who think that the Toronto Police Service couldn't get any worse. Well, I'll bet you it could, and I don't think I want to find out. So I think that I would rather them allocate the resources that they do get. We've talked about this before. I think they waste a lot of money on stupid things like pulling over speeders when that could be done by cameras on Lakeshore instead of having $100,000 a year officers manning radar guns. That's not a good use of resources.
And what Robert just said is pretty key, right? It's not about defunding. It's about reallocating. And despite the fact that that might be the direction we go in, Ryan, what we're going to have to look at as we get a little bit further down the road is, even if we do reallocate, it might not be in the right direction. It might not be in the right spot. We're still going to have to watch and see if a reallocation worked. And if it does work, we can continue down that road. And then you might just see it take a hard right turn and basically end up right back where it used to be, because it just didn't work when you reallocated funds that way.
It's an interesting point, but let me bring it to the two of you, because I talked to the mayor about this just a few minutes ago. It's been something that I've been talking about for years now. I've been uncomfortable for quite some time with the Special Investigations Unit in this city, in this province, and I know it's a provincially run body, but for years, critics have pointed out the fact that it staffs itself with former cops. It's not fully staffed by former cops, but police themselves, former police, are doing a lot of the investigative work. Scott, the mayor made the case that who are you going to replace them with? And I don't have the answer to that question, but certainly I think that's got to be on the table. That's got to be part of the discussion, because if a cop does do wrong, the public needs to know that that investigation is transparent and that it's being done fairly.
Yeah, I agree with all that. But, there are other models. So, for example, if you take a look at some of the large police services in the United States, they de-stream people immediately. right? If they're going to go into that line of a police investigation and work, so that you're never a stigmatized cop within a police service. You're never actually in the full-on police service. You go into that immediately. You're going to be a cop who investigates cops, and that's your career. And that's what they do in LA. I think they do that in New York. I think that's an interesting model.
A lot of parts of Europe.
It may be that our base is too small to do it, but you know, there are other models out there. It's a discussion worth having. I don't think it's a panacea, though.
Yeah, and again, I think, Robert, it's one part of a greater narrative. If people have faith that the decisions that are made when it comes to punishing bad police officers is actually working, that system's working, that can go a long way optically.
Certainly, it's certainly. I mean, something I've been thinking about, Ryan, and I don't know if I'm off base, but I still don't know why all officers have to carry guns. I mean, why don't the officers who are on bikes in Trinity Bellwoods Park not have guns? And maybe things won't escalate when they have to pull them out, or when weapons are required. Maybe we should just have a highly trained ETF that responds when guns are needed. I mean, most officers go through their whole careers where they're having without ever having to draw their weapons. So I'm not sure that in a city where we want to ban handguns so that no one has them, why should all police officers have them? I'm not saying that they shouldn't have some with guns, but I'm not sure that all of them need them all of the time.
Yeah, I think it's got to be an everything on the table approach, and that included. Yeah. Put the entire kitchen sink on there, you empty it out, and have a look at what works and what best practices work, and which ones need to be kicked to the curb or revised. Sick Kids today, they're experts releasing recommendations for school reopening. They talked about desks being structured differently while inside the classroom to promote social distancing, but outside the classroom, kids being allowed to play with one another. No masks. Kids wouldn't be greeted with a temperature reading at the door, but if they have symptoms or display early symptoms, they would be asked to stay home. Scott, I think that this is interesting. I think what a lot of parents are hoping to hear, because we're talking now about the idea of sending kids back to school in September.
We'll see. I mean, I'd like to hear from the government. This is interesting input, but I'd like to hear from the government. I'd like them to put a proposition on the table. There are rumors kicking around that they're talking about a 2 or 3 day week for school. I think that'd be really interesting to see if that's what comes forward, because, you know, the challenge is going to be, how do we really reintegrate if parents are struggling with childcare? And there simply is not enough childcare in the city, in the province, in the country. So, you know, how do you put kids in school in a way that's safe? How do you make certain that enables the economy to operate and parents to go to work? Where do these rules come from? Like when they say, and you're in the playground, you won't have to wear a mask. How come? Like, is that going to be safe? Like, I just don't know. Walk me through the logic. Walk me through the process. Walk me through the implications, the upsides and downsides. So, you know, I think the government needs to lead this discussion, not wait and react. We're at the end of June, for Pete's sake.
Robert, you're a dad as well as a guy who covers Queen's Park. Do you share the same reservations?
Yeah, I mean, all four of us are fathers, and we all, everyone worries about their kids no matter how old they are. And I think I agree with Scott. Like, I don't think we know all the answers yet, but I do think there's one thing about today, the Sick Kids report, that I'm glad about, is that we're talking about the mental health piece of this pandemic and the impacts on our children. I took my son to help clean out his locker last week. They give you a little window of time that you can go, and we didn't want him taking the subway to school. He goes to school in Etobicoke. It's quite far from where we live. And so I drove him, and he went in to clear out his locker. I waited in the car, and then he came out, and he was really blue and depressed afterward. And I said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "You know, it's just really depressing to go into school and there's no one there. And I didn't see any of my friends because none of them were at the same time, they didn't get that same window of time to clean out their lockers." And I think that we really have to start to look at the effect on our kids. This has been going on. We've been in a state of emergency in Ontario for, more than 90 days now. So it's a long, long time, a big chunk of the school year. You know, they went away before March break and they haven't seen their friends since then, unless it's online. I think that is something we really need to be talking about. And I agree, the government needs to do more to figure out how this is going to play in September. But we're at the end of June, or almost at the end of June. We need to be talking about these things now.
Yeah, when you've got, generations of people that still fondly 20, 30, 40 years, think back on their high school years, right? Like your parents will tell you when you're in high school, enjoy this, it's going to be the greatest years of your life. And you're in high school, you think, well, you're nuts. This is actually hell. But I go around my neighborhood and everybody's got those signs on their lawns, right? A graduate of this school, yep. 2020 yep. graduate of that school. And that's something that these kids will never ever get back. They will never have that junior high grad. They will never ever have that high school grad. You can talk about coming back and trying to do it. You can talk about virtually, but you know, I think one thing we can all agree on is this is one memory that will stick with them absolutely forever. And we just don't yet necessarily know what the ramifications of those are, because it's so easy as an adult to just blow something off and say, what's the big deal, right? And that's, I think, the trap that people can fall into. I don't think parents will, for the most part, though.
Let's
well, our kids
these.
Aren't going to be like ahead. Us. Our kids are going to be like our grandparents. Like, you think about it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Our grandparents would say, this is how different the world was during the Depression. This is how different the world was during the war. Our kids are, I seriously think it could be this substantial, right? Our kids are going to say, this is how different it was during COVID. So, yeah, there's going to be a long arc of this thing.
Let's end with these two. Toronto Blue Jays slugger Rowdy Tellez and first base coach Mark Pazinski are accused of leaving a pair of Toronto landlords on the hook for thousands of dollars in unpaid rent after signing leases for downtown Toronto condos. Both men say the COVID-19 pandemic has suspended the MLB season, and because they live in the United States, they shouldn't have to pay their rent in Toronto. Now, Tellez was paid $850,000 U.S. signing bonus. The landlord saying that, and this is the allegation, that he hasn't paid his $4,100 monthly rent since March. Robert, they make a compelling case. I mean, they don't live here. They can't live here. They can't cross the border to get here. Who do you sympathize with?
Well, I mean, if they've signed leases, then they should honor them if they can afford to pay it. I mean, that's been the message from Premier Doug Ford. If you can pay your rent, pay your rent. I mean, Rowdy's, you know, going to probably take a bit of a pay cut because of the shortened season in MLB, but he's still going to be making a good chunk of cash. So I think it looks bad on him, and I don't understand. I actually really don't understand how, if you're a local athlete, you would, like that, you would really want to let something like this get out, because it's such bad public relations. I mean, it's going to cause him more damage than the $4,000 a month rent for a few months, you know.
Yeah, and Scott, baseball is normally known for great public relations.
Exactly. Gone. I want these guys gone. I want them gone. As a fan, I'm serious. Like, that's how harsh I feel about it. I want them gone. They're not paying because they can't. They're not paying because they don't want to, because they don't think they should have to. Sorry. If we're going to get in a conversation about whether or not you should have to, then it needs to be a needs-based conversation. I don't want these guys around. I'm not going to cheer for them. I don't want to be put in a position of watching that guy hit a home run in an important part of an important game and think to myself, now I'm stuck trying to cheer for this guy. He likes the States so much, that's where he wants to pay rent. Stay there.
Scott Reed throwing the high heat at the end. I like it. Don't worry, you won't probably have to watch them until at least 2025 when baseball finally gets their act together. Scott Reed, exactly. Robert Benzie, we appreciate the time today.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
This News Talk 1010 podcast was brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.